Season 3, Episode 6, Kurt Russell.
Oh.
Heyo. Opens up with a dead woman inside a very nice car with a very strange set of circumstances. The car was locked.
Yeah.
There was no keys inside or outside. Her shoes were on the other side of the car. She had bite marks on her hand. She was strangled. And all of her shit was left on her. All her jewelry and her money. So they're not 100% sure why.
So it doesn't look like a robbery. Mm-hmm. That's why it's weird. Excuse me. Because she's killed, but the door was locked. Nothing was stolen. Like, the car was left in good shape. Like,
it doesn't.
It's baffling the detectives. Baffling.
And that leads to what I think the main point of this episode was, Kyle, and that was how many pretty much racist things can we get Sipowicz to say in this episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what happens is Sipowicz has a little bit of a tiff because he can't pronounce the woman's last name, which I believe is
Mukopadia. And then he says my favorite thing in the world.
Okay.
Tread
lightly.
I don't have the exact line in front of me. So if you have it and you can fix it, or he says something to Simone, and then he's like, "You don't get it. These people worship cows.
They live in their home. They would starve before eating one."
Yeah.
And then he said something. He said something to the effect of, "Because 200 years ago, an ancestor brought dishonor on the family and the moon's in Jupiter's asshole." And it's like, dude.
And then Simone has the best response because he goes, "Well, at least we got something to work on."
He says, "Now we have a theory to go on." And then looks
now
around.
We have a theory to go off of.
It's very strange because Sipowicz gets super upset about the name, and then he's like, "What's with the dot on the head? What's that about?" And then Simone is like, "What's the difference between that and earrings?" And then Sipowicz is like, "No, I want to get off this case because you know what this is going to be about," and then goes on this super racist rant.
This would be like if I taught a class, a sociology class, or and I was trying to teach people about white privilege and white people not giving a shit about other people's cultures. This is what I would show. It's this opening of him being like, "What's with the dot? What's with the dot?" These people worship cows, weird shit like that. It's just so funny.
It's
so racist, but so good.
And it's a straight up comedy opening, even though there's a dead woman, because at one point, Sipowicz is like, "Mukopadi, I don't know what it is. Why can't these..." He says, "When these people immigrate, why can't they take pronounceable names?" And then Simone goes, "Oh, you mean Sipowicz?" And then he goes, "Okay, smartass, you say this name." It's it's such a weird, racism-fueled moment. And then we get into the theme song, and once again, this is NYPD Blue Balls. I'm Kirk, and the other voice is Kyle. And we're here to talk about NYPD Blue and every single episode of NYPD Blue, and that's NYPD Blue Balls. And this is the theme music from NYPD Blue. Anyway, they come back, and we got a new temp for Abbandando.
Right here. Hold on.
Oh, shoot. He's got the quote, everybody. He's ready to say it.
He goes, "You know what this is about, huh? You want to know what this is going to be about? Simone, what? These people worship cows. They let them live in the house. They starve to death before they eat them, okay? Andy, what does that have to do with this DOA? Because 200 years ago, some bride wasn't a virgin, and that cursed the whole family line. And now the moon in Jupiter's asshole, and some great-great-great-great-grandson had to wreak vengeance. And that's what this is going to be about." Simone, it says, "So now we got a theory to go on."
So whoever wrote the quote.
I don't think that's right.
So the whole quote could be wrong.
Yeah, this quote's an idiot.
So the whole quote could be wrong. That's what's great that we learned in the last 5 seconds.
Simone says, "What's your last name?" Sipowicz. "Why don't you quit while you're ahead?" Bahat. Bobby Simone. Bat? Bahat. The cat got out. They're going to be angry with me. Bahat. that scene where, like, sorry, that's when they meet
the house boy.
Jatine, the house boy. Yeah, sorry.
Now that we're all over the place due to Sipowicz's racism, because he says bat. That's what the joke. Yeah. The joke of the line is, he goes, "What's your last name?" And he's like, "Quit while you're ahead." And the guy goes, "Bat." And he goes, "Bat, B-A-T." And he's like, "No, B-H-A-T." And then he makes fun of the fact that, "Oh, the name's simple, but you spell it weird." And it's like, you just leave him alone.
Hold on. No, okay. There's two more fucked up racist stuff. Okay, Simone. This is after they find out that there was in the car was another Indian person.
Mm-hmm.
So they're done interviewing somebody, and then Simone goes to Sipowicz, "Hey, at least we know now it was an Indian guy." And then Sipowicz goes, "Now all we got to figure out is what blood cult he belongs to." Sipowicz, we'll talk to these kids some more, see if the mother was away a lot, but I don't think there was a boyfriend. Fancy. What are you basing that on, Sipowicz? On the fact that in India, these women throw themselves on their husbands' funeral piles.
Okay.
So good. Sorry.
Anyway.
So then, okay, another good one. This is between Sipowicz and the new lady at the front desk, Evelyn Setzker. Evelyn groans. Then Sipowicz goes, "Anybody hear a dog howl?"
He's talking about her feet.
I don't find that especially funny.
He's talking about her feet because she's like rubbing her feet. He's talking about her hounds or her dogs are barking. That's actually the thing I wanted to mention. They have someone temping in for Abadondo, and she's kind of the worst.
Yeah.
First up, she shows up like I think a week late. Fancy mentions like we were expecting you a week ago, and she's like, "Oh yeah, I got caught up in some stuff," which is like,
yeah.
I feel like if you've ever said that to your boss, like
you caught up. I got caught up and not giving a shit. That's what she should have said.
I got caught up and not caring.
I got caught up and not giving a fuck.
And she's like at the end of her scene where like everybody pampers her, like Fancy takes the phone from her because she goes, "Hey, it's free. He's right next to me," and like holds the phone up. Russell goes to get her coffee. And then the phone rings again after Fancy leaves. She goes, "I guess that's going to be ringing all day, huh?" It's like, yeah, it's your fucking job. Like, that's like taking a job as a bag boy. You're like, "Oh, I got to fill bags all day?" Like, yeah, that's exactly what you're being paid to do. Like, what
like
are you
being a teacher? Be like, "Oh, I guess these kids are going to want to learn about science today."
"I guess I got to teach them about geometry." It's like, yeah, that's what you're here to do.
"I guess I gotta do my job. What a bummer." Nah, she's the worst.
Yeah, there's that's another...
That's why I like that her and Sipowicz don't get along, because Sipowicz doesn't fuck with that shit.
Yeah, to flesh out the rest of her character, which is just, hey, I'm annoying, and I suck, her back pillow goes missing, and she's like, "I found my back pillow," God. And Fancy's like, "Good for you," and he's like, "I think that Sipowicz was hiding it." And then at the end of the episode, when she walks by Sipowicz, she's like, "Just don't let me find out it was you." And Sipowicz is like, "What the fuck are you talking about? I don't got time to hide." Like, he doesn't know what she's talking about, but if he did find out, he'd be like, "I don't have time to hide your shit. I have things to do. I work here."
"Yeah, I'm a fucking grown-up. Like, I don't like you. I'm not gonna wanna hang out and, like, play fun little games with you and shit."
They go to the woman's house. And, like, you mentioned that line, they meet Jatine, who is the houseboy, who's 18 years old.
Jatine.
And Jatine tells them, "Oh, they went to the restaurant." And he's like, "The wife went to the restaurant?" "Yeah." "Alone?" "Yeah." And they're like, "Well, did she go with anybody?" "No." And they kind of just, like, let it be. Like, they don't question it.
Well, he's being really weird. Like, he, like, won't let them into the house. Like, he won't open the door. Like, they have a screen door, he won't open it. He's super short with them. He's like, "Oh my god, the cat's out, I gotta go," and, like, hangs up on them and stuff like that, you know?
Well, maybe you can call me racist, if you'd like. But I feel like that was also part of, like, who he is in terms of his job, and, like, who he is and the standing
yeah,
of that
definitely.
Family. Like, if I came up, because I don't know as much about Indian culture as any other culture, because I'm white and I never had to, but... if a
and
dude
racist.
Yeah, basically. And if a dude opened the door and is like, I'm the houseboy, I'd be like, okay, so this is like a servant. So they're not going to be totally cool with me asking them about the family's business or like getting all up on their property. Like, he's going to be very much like, oh, my job is to keep the house secure and everybody inside cool, and they're not going to be cool with me talking to these dudes.
Also, if you understand, you don't have to understand, but like, if you get like the caste system in India, like, you would understand that like he's in lower economically, so he was obviously like bought, so he really doesn't have a say. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
He was sold. Like, he was basically sold, so he doesn't have a choice. And, like, yeah. Because that shit's real. Like, that shit happens here all the time, too. Like, you'll see random news stories every now and then, like, in New York, where it's like, oh, yeah, a family kept, like, these people hostage, enslaved, or, like, they kept them as indentured servants in the house. Like, weird shit like that. Like, there's still that kind of shit happening here. In this culture, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in America, because other cultures allow it. They don't look at it as slavery. They look... I mean, I don't know what I'm saying. However you want to look at it.
Because you don't want
to... They don't look at it as being bad, you know what I mean? But in America, you still hear stories about shit like this happening.
Because eventually they interview the houseboy one-on-one. Well, two-on-one, because Simone and Sipowicz are both there. And... the way it sounds is like, oh, he's been working for this family since he was 12. He came over to America with them, and
excuse me.
And when he talks about him, he doesn't talk about him in a negative light. He talks about him like, oh, I feel like I'm part of the family. It's just my job is the housework and the chores, and I don't really get a say about anything, but I'm a part of the family in some weird way.
Yeah, it's really weird.
That story plays out where they run the normal gamut of questions with the husband, who is played by famous face Eric Avari, who he's not like, I can't point to a specific thing he's in except for The Mummy for some stupid reason, but
what I thought. He's also wasn't he in an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I don't know.
I remember. I picture. Oh no, he was. No, he wasn't Abed Nadir's dad.
No, he wasn't.
He was somebody's dad in a funny comedy. I just forgot what it was. Anyways, it's not helpful.
It's not helpful at all. But
not helpful at all. So moving on. But yeah.
But they go to tell him at the restaurant where the kids are waiting, and his response is very measured, which I think would be in line with that culture. But it also is kind of like, they immediately, you know, red flags come up like, oh, well, maybe he did it, maybe he's involved, whatever.
Yeah, because he's not showing any emotion, and that's really weird when you're not showing emotion, especially when it's your wife that's dead.
Well, I would chalk that up that he doesn't believe it, because, like, they say...
True.
They say, oh, your wife was really, really hurt, and she died. And his response is like, I don't believe you. I'm going to have to see her.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to confirm that this is really her, because I don't believe you. So that's why it's kind of like, oh, that's acceptable. He's disassociating with it. This didn't happen to my wife. So that makes sense. But as a detective, you kind of have to be like, oh, well, he responded strangely.
Yeah. So I realized what movie...
You remember him?
Hold on. And I just can't find it.
He's in a bunch of shit. He's been a character actor
on
TV forever.
What I remember him in is he was in fucking Biodome.
He was in Biodome?
He played the guy who worked at, like, the 7-Eleven.
You mean Encino Man? You mean Encino Man.
Encino Man. Sorry, Encino Man.
I mean...
And when he comes into the 7-Eleven, Pauly Shore, and he starts talking about squeezing the juice...
Uh-huh.
He's like, no squeezing... He's like, no squeezing the juice!
No squeezing
like
the juice.
He yells that at him. That's what I was thinking. I mean, we came a long way to get there.
The reason I've been so unintelligible, I kept thinking about Squeezing the Juice by Pauly Shore.
Encino Man, a highly underrated film.
I don't know. I think it's rated perfectly well. Have you rewatched it recently? It's
yeah,
not
it's pretty shitty.
It's
yeah,
not Sean Astin's best.
Raji, him and Jerry Bednob. They were both were also in he's the other Indian guy at 40-Year-Old Virgin. Remember mm-hmm. him?
Yeah, I remember him.
He's the one that got, like, I think in trouble for, like, beating up his wife or something.
Anyway, we're getting farther away from the topic, which is NYPD Blue. They try to,
yeah.
with the husband, they try to run the same questions. Does she have a boyfriend? Do you have a girlfriend? Do you have any issues with any, like, loan sharks or any investors? Is there something wrong? He gives all of his answers very measured, very quiet, very robotic almost. But they're all good answers from the detective standpoint. He's like, no, I don't have a girlfriend. No, we have no problems financially. We have no problems with our investors. We have no problems with anybody in illegal activities. Everything is A-okay. My kids aren't going in any trouble. So then they interview the kids individually, and Simone finds out that Jatine was looking at, I believe her name was Asha?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think it was Asha.
You find out, one, that the mom normally takes the kids, didn't this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that, because she had to talk to Jatine, and they bring that up.
And she says it's because Jatine asked for a photo of the daughter, and it,
yeah.
it became clear to Simone that they're just hiding, that they're kind of into each other.
Yeah.
The mom looked through his things and was upset with Jatine and wanted to have a talk with him. So now he's suspect number one, which leads to the interview. Which I thought was a really good NYPD Blue interview.
With the boy? Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Because that guy is playing, like, the perfect houseboy. He's playing, like, look, I'm an indentured servant. I wouldn't hurt them at all. And then as they unravel the story, he's like, look, they were going to send me back to India. They were going to send me away from the only family I've known for 6 years.
Yeah.
Because I got close with the family, and she was going to do it, like, that day, and I asked her not to, and then she started hitting me. And I was like, and I freaked out, and I panicked. I bit her hands, and then I choked her.
So calmly.
I'm saying it, like, just going over the story, but it's a really good scene that I wish you could go to Hulu and see, but as of right now, it's not on Hulu, because they're more worried about all the Emmys they're fucking winning with Handmaid's Tale, rather than any of us that want to see NYPD Blue.
It's Handmaid's Tale's pretty good, though, you know.
I haven't watched it. I'm not watching it in protest, even though it doesn't matter what I do to Hulu. It's such a good scene, and you just gotta watch it, because I can't really explain it, but Sipowicz and Simone are like, they're not going hard on this guy, they're just asking the right questions. And then the guy tells them what's up, and you can tell both of them feel bad for him because he was put in a situation that he couldn't control, and then shit just got too real.
Yeah, he basically had to, he basically had to defend himself.
And then he went over the line because he was scared, but he did go over the line. And then, like, they asked him, like, what anybody would ask, which is, Why did you leave everything in the car? And he said, well, I wouldn't steal from the family.
And he's like, that's what it's weird.
He's like, why would you lock the door? And he's like, well, I didn't want anybody to break in and do anything.
That's really weird.
That's a weird moment, but it also explains, like, that's who he is. He cares about the family. He wants to make the family safe and wants to make their things safe and wouldn't harm any of those things. While all that's going on, the ladies of the 15th, Kim and Adrian, Lesniak and Russell, they get a call for a DOA at the hospital, and it was a druggie just left outside, named Cecil Green.
Left right outside the hospital.
As they investigate, they notify next of kin. The next of kin shows up, and he is a famous face that we should recognize. I don't know if you recognize him. The gentleman who played... I want to get his character's name right. The guy who played Crawford Green, I believe the father of Cecil Green who died, that gentleman is Al White. And Al White is the dude in Back to the Future 2 who swings a bat at Marty McFly when he comes into the wrong house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the guy that goes, everything Marty McFly says, like, I just got the wrong house. Like, you damn right you got the wrong house. Like, super stereotypical. And
oh, my God.
And he said one of my favorite lines of it, we're not going to be terrorized. It's one of my favorite lines for some weird reason. And I saw his face, and while watching the episode, I was like, I know I've seen this dude before. And I could not put my finger on it. And then I just looked up IMDb, and his number one known for is Back to the Future 2. And I was like, oh, shoot, it's the guy. But he tells them, that's my son, Cecil Green. He has a heroin problem. He was left there by a fence, which is a term I didn't really understand until watching this episode. He sells guns and illegal shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they set up a sting on him, which pisses off Simone, and he has a little bit of a tiff in the squad room.
I forgot why.
Because he heard that they were going to set up a sting on a guy that sells guns, and they were going to take some new guys from Anti-Crime, and Simone didn't think that was good enough.
Oh, yeah, because to fucking guard his precious darling. I forgot.
And, like, the whole squad room blows up with this argument, and it leads...
Well, he's wrong.
Oh, yeah,
he's wrong.
Of course he's wrong. He's just overprotective of a person who's also in the same danger as him, which kind of makes him ridiculous.
He's just perpetrating the patriarchal society of men telling women what to do.
Guess that's true, yeah. They set up on this guy, they run a sting on him that was pretty interesting, where Kim pretended to... Kim. That's the actress's name, Kim Delaney. Where Diane Russell...
Kimmy D.
She sets up on this guy, stings him, they bring him in. He's not a fence as bad as Crawford says. Turns out Crawford, Cecil, and this dude all did drugs together, and Crawford was afraid to go to the hospital.
And he was hoping that that guy would take him to the hospital, but he didn't.
Or he did, but he didn't actually bring him in. He just, like,
he
left him at the door.
He was supposed to do, take him inside to help him, yeah.
I thought... Al White, who played Crawford Green, I thought he did a great job. Like, he seems like... pretty much everybody did a good job in terms of guest stars on this. He played, like, the guy who's, like, super indignant and, like, upset because he is partially responsible for what happened. He can't really forgive himself for what happened because he could have done the same thing instead of letting Lionel do it for him. But he had stolen from the hospital, and that's why he couldn't go back. While that's going on, that's the thing. This episode and the last episode, like, they jam a lot of stuff into it because while Martinez and Medavoy are fixing a car, a robbery comes in and they maybe like half a block up. So they go to take care of it and the guy just went across the street and robbed a different market.
Yeah.
And it turns out that dude was on some crazy-ass mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because when they first catch him, he's like, your badge is melting. And then, later, when they try to interview him, the guy says, you know what your problem is? You're in a comic book. Like, weird.
Yeah, some weird-ass shit.
But what's really cool about that dude is, like, and maybe this is just the, like, weird hippie in me, he doesn't seem like a very violent dude. He was just, you know, a little high on mushrooms.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he started stealing things, but he was obviously off of his rocker. And then when he comes to, Medavoy and James ask him what the deal is, and he's running this game with this Russian guy for flimsies. Which I guess are credit card numbers, but on paper.
Yes.
That the guy transfers to real cards and then uses them.
Yeah, then you can use them for a while before people...
realize
people it. People say that their things are stolen, their credit card's stolen.
Well, I really liked that character. I felt like everybody, like all the guest stars did a great job. But I really liked him because he was believable high and then he was believable sober.
This is the, like... 2-year run where I feel like they go on having really good character actors and they do a good job getting like the right people to come in and play the character, sorry, and act.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works out really well.
The funny, well, there's a couple funny Metavoid lines when he's dealing with the guy after he's sobered up. The guy's telling him this story, and it seems really shady. Like, the guy's like, oh, I sell the flimsies to Sergey, and then he puts them on the cards, and then he lives the life, but I just steal the flimsies for him. He goes, they're like, so this story stands up, let's go get him. And he's like, oh, that's not gonna work, man. He's like super paranoid, and he's just gonna put him in a pot and set him on fire. And Metavoid goes, well, that would fall under the area of our problem. So
yeah.
So you'll set up here and we'll go see if we can catch him. And then later, when they go to catch Sergey and they catch him, you know, we had to get some ass in these episodes with a prostitute. He goes, you persecute me because I'm Russian. And then Metavoid goes, hey, my grandmother was Russian.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Last week and last episode, we talked about Lesniak's rumor about her being gay and how she just put it forth so that Martinez would stop bothering her.
Yeah, that weird-ass shit.
In this episode, she has a very strange conversation with Russell.
Yeah.
I didn't know how I felt about it, but I also was like, I don't know if I have an opinion because I'm not a homosexual. But it seemed really insulting, in a way, to be like, look, I told James I was gay so he'd leave me alone, but John gave me this thing. Should I go? Because it's yeah. Like, okay, so then are you, even though, like, I understand people, like, it's so hard. God, I feel like PC Principal is going to punch me. Like, it's hard to be that guy that's like, you can't figure out if you're gay or straight because that's, oh, that's a scale, and you can be this, and you can be that. I understand. But it seems weird to ask another person, like, so, am I gay? Like, it seems like a weird thing to ask them that. And then how are they supposed to respond? Especially when her and Russell haven't, like, hung out. Like, they're not gal pals.
Yeah, it's the whole Lesniak being gay thing is weird. Like, I get that they were trying to be edgy and talk about, like, you know, people being gay and all this stuff, but, like, it just wasn't good. Like, I don't know, like she just wasn't, like, their story was just dumb. It's like she says she's gay, she's not. Like, it just was really dumb to me. I didn't like that part.
It's also kind of like, it's hard, like, that's another thing, like, because I feel, it's like we can't, it's as if we can't talk about it because we're straight white males. It seems wrong the way they portrayed it, but it's also a bunch of older white males who got the job of writing NYPD Blue, and they're
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's true.
And they're like, we gotta talk about gay people, but we don't know how, and we got this John character, he seems to be killing it, but how do we write this, like, maybe lesbian character, and everything they do is just kind of, like, weird and wrong? It seems that way. Like, with the hindsight and the years that we have watching other shows and, like, dealing with other real people. So, yeah, that's just a weird, like, I think anybody watching that scene now would say the same thing. This is really weird. But I feel like they would say the same thing about all the racism. Or not racism, the racially charged humor of Sipowicz, because even at the end of the episode, Fancy goes, huh, Sipowicz, a guy killing the mom because he doesn't want her to see, doesn't want the guy to see her daughter, you've never worked a case like that, right? And then Sipowicz says, I guess there wasn't as much use of the supernatural.
Yeah.
Another great line, which will lead into the last thing we'll talk about, where Russell and Simone have a blow-up in the bathroom. Basically, Russell's like, you're only saying that because you're sleeping with me. And then Simone's like, don't say this is just about sex.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then she's like, I'm changing, you're going to have to leave. And when Fancy's like, see me before you leave, and walks away, Sipowicz is like, I try to teach you tact, but you just don't listen.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he says, I try to teach you tact, it just can't get through. When it's like, Sipowicz, come on. You're a gross, basically racist, angry white man. The episode ends with a weird, weird talk that sheds a lot of weird light on the future of the show, because they have kind of a heart-to-heart where Simone and Russell kind of explain their feelings, and Simone says, look, I was worried about you because, you know, I had a wife, and she came home and just said, I'm sick, and next thing you know, she doesn't get better. And Russell says, and then Russell says, well, I'm not going to be doing anything stupid because I really like what we got going on here and I want it to last a long time. And if you are like me and you, you know what happens to Simone and Russell.
Yeah.
And that last, those last lines kind of made me go, oh, because we know this won't last for a very, very long time.
Geez, spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, guys, here's the deal. Actors, they get better jobs and they move on. So one of these actors eventually moves on, and it's the one we wish didn't. I'll just leave that out there. But yeah, did you, I don't know, did you feel anything from that last scene, or did you even think about it?
No, I just thought he was being a dickhead the whole time. Like, I don't really think about what happens later on when I watch it, for the most part. Yeah, so all I really thought about was, like, how big of a dick he was being, and how he just needed to chill the fuck out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get it, your wife died, but you're gonna have to, like, she's just trying to do her job, like, that's all she wants to do, like, you need to chill the fuck out, basically.
Well, that's why I love the Fancy dress down, because it's like, it was funny, because Fancy brings him in and says, so, I don't need to tell you this, but you don't get to second-guess assignments. And if,
yeah.
And I understand that you care for her, but she's going to be in dangerous situations, and you need to get used to that, or there are other departments in the city. I think Fancy does, like, the quick dress-down, because he's like, Simone's smart enough to know what the problem is.
Yeah, Simone got it. As soon as he said, come to my office, Simone knew what was going on. He just had to do it. He just had to make sure you heard him say it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, linked through MixBagOfHats.com, is on iTunes and Stitcher. Rate and review the show if you're interested. I mean, if you're going to say something bad, don't rate and review the show. And as of right now, I mentioned it earlier in the episode, Hulu is not showing NYPD Blue Balls. We hope it gets up there soon. Thank you for listening, and keep watching NYPD Blue. Later, everybody. Thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. As of right now, Hulu is not playing NYPD Blue. So you know what you should do with your time? You should go over to Amazon. You should check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, a comprehensive exploration of the legendary drama. It's 99 cents of your money, and it's worth a little bit of a read, especially if you're going through the show with us. Gene Kendall actually sent us some notes about the episode we did 2 weeks ago, Dirty Laundry, and he writes, Detective Drucker actually doesn't seem so bad, in terms of just doing the job day to day. Somewhat lazy, but not criminally corrupt or stupid. Later episodes will occasionally feature less than perfect cops, but the more subtle portrayal of Detective Drucker will be abandoned for more broadly defined characters. And I guess that's true. I just really didn't like Drucker's attitude. I felt like, sure, he did his job, and while he was wrong, he was also a dick about it. And that's why I didn't like him. He was also kind of a sweaty mess. I didn't like that either. Gene also writes, the shootout in the squad room at the end, is this the first time shots are fired in the squad? I remember the cops pulling weapons on the female thief who took Donna hostage in season 1 Christmas episode, but were shots fired? I think they were fired. I'm pretty sure that once they got Abandondo away from her, they fired upon her, which made that scene even more weighty because they had a kid with them. Pretty sure that's what happened. However, I might just be making that up. Going based off memory, I haven't looked it up, but I'm pretty sure shots were fired. Gene also mentions that the scene where John cuts Andy's hair is quite monumental, and I agree. I mean, it shows that he's becoming a regular part of the show, and I'm excited to see him all the time, and I can't wait to talk about him more here on NYPD Blue Balls, iTunes, Stitcher, AstroBrothersPodcast.com, MixBagOfHats.com. Rate and review if you like it, and keep watching NYPD Blue somehow, because it's not on Hulu yet.